The following segment is a paid commercial program by Christensen CPAs and Consultants. It's time for Ask the Expert on News Talk 1340 and 96.3 FM, KWLM.
And we must say it's plural today again, experts, as we've got Joel Gratz, a managing partner with Christensen PLLA. Is it still? Is that
PLLP. Yeah, Professional Limited Liability Partnership.
Sorry about that.
No, that's fine. How you doing today, Bill?
Real good. And then you brought one of your office...
teammates.
Yes.
Yeah.
I like that. You did a little fist bump before going on the air. So
don't tell everybody our secrets, Bill. Lindsey Kranz, manager with Christensen, who's been with me for 14-plus years. Mm-hmm. I know when you look at her, she looks like about 21.
I was going to say she looks way too young for that.
But that's just because she takes good care of herself. But and I look like complete, you know, old man next to her. But no, she started in our tax department right out of the gate, and she has been specializing in tax basically her whole career. Were we your first job out of school, too, Lindsey?
Yes. Yep.
Born and raised Litchfield.
Yep, born and raised in Litchfield. Went to St. Cloud State after that, and Christensen actually came to the campus to conduct interviews, and they were my first job right out of college.
Yeah, they must be a pretty good outfit then that you've stuck with them this long.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Yes.
That was a trick question, right, when I'm in the room, but thank you, Bill, for asking that question. That's good.
No, that's interesting, and, you know, this is, of course, really the busy time. I don't know if there's ever a downtime. You guys are busy year-round, but... I have to ask you, how, you know, did you have an interest in accounting and things like that at a younger age, or was there somebody kind of that inspired you to go into your field? Or tell us a little bit about how you got to be where you are today.
Yes, actually, tax is a family business. My mom is a CPA in Litchfield, so I grew up doing taxes. I think I did my first tax return when I was about 12 years old. But I, you know, always dreamed of working in a bigger firm, to have that firm concept. And so that was my plan out of college, to get a job at one of the big firms. And I was successful in that.
Mm-hmm. Now, you've talked before, Joel, too, about recruiting and how important that is, not only for your firm, but I mean, we're all the businesses right now seem to be really looking for good people to come and join their teams. And so is it something that you do kind of look at, like, say, when Lindsey was in school, are you looking at people that are in those, you know, maybe latter stages of their education where you really try to actively recruit them?
Yeah, we have obviously an HR department that does that for us, for Lindsey and I, and we try to think far ahead and look at needs. And honestly, when we hired Lindsey, you know, visiting colleges at that point when you were probably a senior or a junior, at, you know, maybe, I guess, was good enough. And I'm saying good enough in today's world. Now we're talking about getting into the high schools, local high schools, so they know who we are, what we do, so that at least plants a seed so that if they ever want to move back or think about us, they remember that firm that came to school that one day to visit. So it's... The recruiting has become much more intense. People are signing and giving bonuses to sophomores in college to say, you will sign with us, in the right? I mean, it's insane. I guess good for the students, bad for employers to some degree, because you're really gambling on somebody that early in the game, you know? So recruiting is even more important than it's ever been. It was super important back in the day when we were lucky enough to land Lindsey 14-plus years ago. And it's just nothing, you know, it's so important. You can't say enough about recruiting and what you have to do to be in front of people.
So now you, as, you know, being in the business this long, do you encourage other young people then that you know that might have an interest to, you know, really pursue this type of career?
Yes, we've actually had some high school students come to the office and they do kind of a day in the life of, and I always encourage it. The work that we do, you know, it's different every day and it's fast paced. It's something that you just don't get bored and you're always learning. There's always new tax laws. There's always new areas to learn. So it's just really that lifelong career where you're always developing and learning, and it's a great field to get into.
I would say, too, that the length you've been in, it's really changed where there was a lot of, you know, things on paper when you probably first started, but now it seems everything is electronic these days.
Yep. When I first started, I remember having just one computer screen, paper files. Now we have three monitors. Everything is scanned in, electronic. It has really, really changed. It's amazing to think about how it's changed in 14 years.
Yeah. Imagine when I started, we were using the stone tablets and we were pounding on it with hammers and stuff.
I saw a cute cartoon the other day. Somebody was, you know, doing some of that, and he said, "Boy, he was doing it as a practical joke because the guy said, what are you putting on there?" He said, "I have no idea." And it's gonna be fun when somebody sees this 1,000 years from now, tries to figure it out.
That's exactly right. Yeah, the world's so fast-paced now. Yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah, and I don't know. It seems a little risky, though. I mean, I know there's redundancy and backups and stuff, but we are putting a lot of stock that the internet is going to, you know, continue to be, you know, secure, I guess, and not, you know, be subject to a collapse.
Well, we, as a firm, spend crazy amounts of money on security because it's that important, first of all, for our clients' confidentiality and not wanting a breach and ransomware and all that stuff. So we spend, you know, we have a great IT department. AJ and Josh at our firm help us every day to do that. And the money is well spent. Every morning, Lindsay and I, when we log in, because we're tax professionals, there's like multiple, you know, factor authentication have to do. And we complain every single day about it. Am I right?
Yeah.
Because I'm not joking you, Bill. Yeah. It takes me 15 minutes to go into my office, turn on the computer, get logged in, go through my 87 passwords that are about 2,000 characters long. And I forget them every day, right? And then you got to do that. You got to change them every 90 days or less.
Yeah.
So, we take it very seriously at our firm, and you're right. It adds another level of concern, another level of detail, another level of cost. But that's, you know, unfortunately, the bad people in the world do that stuff to us, right? They make us get that secure. But at the end of the day, that's what we have to do, and we do it for our clients every single day.
Yeah. Well, maybe we should get to the subject at hand a little bit. You guys came in with some things that you want to get out to the public here. And this is tax season now, and I like this first question because I wondered about this myself, and I guess I dealt with it when my father passed away, but it's getting to be a long time ago. I can't even remember exactly how that went. But if somebody does pass away, what about? Do they have to file a tax return, you know, say for the year that, you know, they say they were alive for 6 months or 9 months or whatever? How does that work, Lindsay?
So the first question, they do normally have to file a last final 1040 tax return for the time that they were alive. Now, if someone passes away in, you know, January, February, they may not have enough taxable income to have to file. The normal filing requirements apply in that situation. The next part is the tax return for the remaining part of the year after they pass away, up until assets are distributed to the beneficiaries. What requires the filing of what's called a 1041 fiduciary tax return is when the estate receives any type of income. So that can be investment income. It can be retirement income when there wasn't a beneficiary named. It can be the sale of a personal residence. That would require that filing to pass that income to the beneficiaries, which then pay tax on their own personal income tax returns. The other part of estate tax is the actual estate tax return, which is a little bit more rare because there is a $12 million exemption on the federal side and $3 million on the state side. So if somebody dies and they have assets that exceed that amount, then there's also that estate tax filing requirement. So don't see that quite as often, but we do file a lot of 1041 fiduciary tax returns.
Okay.
1041 is the trust series, if you will. There's a million reasons to file trust ones, and we're not going to be able to get it to all of them today. But if there was a complicated and scary thing in tax, which everything in tax is probably scary to some degree to a lot of people, the estate and the trust world has so many nuances to it, and when and how and where, that if you don't seek some help with a professional, boy, you're kind of hanging out there sometimes on that. And as you can tell, Lindsay is one of our experts in that field for our firm, does a great job taking some of that scariness away from doing that. So there's, in just the few minutes she spoke there, you heard like four or five different ways you got to go with different things once somebody passes away. And based upon assets and income, and when you pass away, your beneficiaries, you know, your trustees. I mean, it's something that in our 20-minute conversation today, we're not going to be able to get too detailed on.
Right.
But it's very important, and every step matters.
One thing that popped in my mind right away, the importance of actually having a will, I think, you know, it can ease things for certainly you trying to figure out just where, you know, what form you're going to file and if you have to file. And so that's something I know your firm can help with too, right?
Yeah. One of our items, estate planning, is growing. We've always done that. We're doing more of it every day because the world's, as we mentioned, is getting more complicated. You know, a will is probably the most basic thing that we feel you need. If you die without a will, a judge or somebody else is going to decide where your assets go and where it should be distributed. Mm-hmm. And that could be scary, right? So if you want it, your assets to go to somebody in particular, and not just divided three ways if you have three kids, or if you have, you know, a charitable organization you want to distribute monies to, you need to document it when you're living. Otherwise, it may not happen. Mm-hmm. So at a minimum, a will is very necessary, in my opinion. And it can be very detailed. It can be very simple. It can be a one pager. It can be a 100-pager, right? So it all depends. And that's why there's really no cookie cutter approach to any estate planning that we do, which makes it very, you know, consultative of nature, where you have to really get to know your clients, wouldn't you say, Lindsay? And
yes.
And sit down with them and identify their goals. And it's a scary, complicated, again, I use that word, process, because there's a million different variations of how you can go. But a will, excellent topic, you know, Bill, is that you need to have it a minimum. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, it's going to be hairy scary after you pass away. So,
now, as far as filing taxes, what is the income cutoff where you don't have to file if you're under that? You know what that is right off the top of your head?
It's usually about the standard deduction amount.
Okay.
So around $12,000 is typically when.
Yeah.
For single and 25-ish.
Yeah.
For married.
And,
college.
You know, it's even if you have everything paid for in today's world, it's pretty tough to live on that, isn't it? So.
Yes.
I would be shocked. I can't live on that for sure. So, no, that'd be crazy.
Another thing before we get into gifting, I wanted to ask you, because it's such a hot topic again now, and that's this tax on Social Security income. What actually is it? I mean, what are the boundaries right now? Because I'm working and drawing Social Security. I assume I'm paying some tax, but I don't even know, I guess, if I'm, what percentage is it? And then what are the parameters for that, for the state taxing us on our Social Security income?
So Social Security is up to 85% taxable depending on the other income that you have. So like you just mentioned, you're still working, you're also collecting Social Security.
Mm-hmm.
You most likely are paying tax on 85% of that. Now, the tax rate that you're paying on that is your normal tax rate. So if you're in the 12% bracket, it would be 12% on 85%. If you're in the 22% bracket, it's the 22% plus your state income tax rate. Now, Minnesota also has a subtraction for part of, but not all of, your Social Security. So there are other states that don't tax any of it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that's something that has been discussed. But right now, you know, it may be like a $5,000 subtraction. So you're still paying tax on a good, if not most, of your Social Security.
I see.
It's a complicated formula. So
yeah.
I'm impressed, Lindsay. You had it all figured out.
Well, and that's something I've often wondered about, because you hear these kind of blanket statements, and depending on what angle they're coming from, they tell you partial truths. Especially these politicians are good at that.
Yes.
I can't tell you, out of 10 retirees, I bet you 8 assume they don't have to pay any income tax on their Social Security. Would you say that's fair, Lindsay? Maybe not quite that high, but at least 50%. And when I tell them you're going to be paying tax on it because your other income, if it's land rent or investment income, or I'm still working in your case, it's shocking. They're like, why would I have to pay tax on my retirement income?
Yes.
And I can't, it's hard not to say it, you know, without smiling, but I mean, it's another source of income that the government likes to tax us on.
Yeah. And I wonder, you know, they never can do with less. So, I mean, if they do, you know, maybe get compromised and take that away, I'm looking what other area are they going to raise the taxes?
Because
it seems like they never really, you know, even can hold the line on spending. And so.
Right. So do you think $7 billion enough to live on here in Minnesota?
I would hope so, but you never know. The numbers keep, well, on everything. They just kind of, especially now we're in this, reminds me of the 70s a little bit, unfortunately, and into the 80s. You know, the early 80s, too, was a lot of inflation. But now let's get to your second question, and that's the gifting part, because that's changed, hasn't it? They've gotten a little more restrictive on what we can do, right, as far as gifting to our heirs or whatever?
Yeah, so this is a question I get all the time from clients, especially around Christmas time. You know, they'll call me up and how much can I give my kids without having to pay tax? And this is what a lot of people misunderstand about gifting is that if you give, so you can give any number of people up to $16,000. That's a new amount for 2022.
Okay.
So $16,000 per year, which means if you're a married couple and you have a son, you can give $16,000 times two because you can each give the $16,000. If you exceed that amount, it's not that there's tax due. It's that there is a gift tax filing requirement. And so anything over that $16,000 is reported to the IRS on a gift tax return. And what that does is it reduces that $12 million we were talking about earlier. The excess over that $16,000 comes off of your exemption amount that you get when you pass away. So now instead of, you give one of your kids $1 million, instead of having the $12 million exemption, you'll have the $11 million minus the $16,000.
Yeah, and sometimes people, they get more enjoyment out of maybe giving it while they're still alive too, and especially if their heir, can really benefit from it at a certain time if they've got the money.
I was in a meeting just last week where they actually, the mom and dad said, my kids could use it now, not later. When they've already got their wealth, they have kids now, they got a lot of things going on. I want to start a gifting program, we call it, now to determine what I can live off and whatever I don't need, I'm going to start gifting to my kids. So you are exactly right. I think a lot of that has changed over these last years to distribute the wealth sooner, knowing that they may have to pay tax on it at some point anyway.
Yeah.
So they're trying to distribute it sooner. So that's a good point, Bill.
And then on the $16,000, then you have to file then if it's over that, or say it's under that, then you don't have to file a special form then at that
correct
point?
Yep, if it's under that, there's absolutely nothing that you have to do. But I always tell people, even if it's over that, the gift tax return is a really scary subject for a lot of people, and I try and tell them, it's no big deal. If you want to give over $16,000, go ahead. It's just a simple extra tax return that we have to file. No tax actually paid on either end of the gift. So it's really not a big deal to have to file that gift tax return.
Yeah, that is reassuring because it is something I think if we don't understand it, and then the fact that we think the person that's getting it is going to be paying
tax,
half of whatever to the government, kind of scary situation. So,
which is not the case, as Lindsay said. You do not have to pay tax when you receive the gift. If there was any tax to pay, it'd be the person providing the gift that would have to pay the tax, right?
Yeah.
If you're over the $12 million.
Yeah, that'd be a large gift.
Right. So, I'll take it too, so I'll split it with you if that's okay. Bill's passing it out. I'll take whatever half is. So
I wish I could pass it out like that. That would
be
fun.
Nice. Yeah, it would be fun. Yeah, I'm not there either, Bill, so don't feel bad.
Well, we only have a couple minutes left. I know the time has gone awfully quick today, but you wanted to also maybe discuss a little bit when you should start planning your estate plan or organizing it a little bit.
Yes, it's never too early is what I tell everybody. And kind of like we discussed earlier, the will is the most important thing. Work to figure out what your goals are and get that in writing so that everybody knows what the plan is. Also, a healthcare directive is a really important piece that a lot of people don't think about. If you become incapacitated, who is going to make those medical and decisions for you? And also the power of attorney, who's going to make those financial decisions for you? Planning in advance really makes the process so much easier for your family when something happens to you. And, you know, we can't do it all ourselves, but we work alongside attorneys to help facilitate the process and, you know, start that process talking to the client about what their goals are and get them all the way to the finish line.
Yeah. You know, it's been one of the things that kind of has frustrated me on this healthcare directive, too. They'll give you a form when you come in sometimes to see the doctor, give you about 3 minutes to look at it. Well, maybe get one or two questions answered, because some of these decisions you might even change your mind too.
And you can. Yeah. And once you have them, you can always update them. And I agree 100% what Lindsay said. Those are the big three is, mm-hmm. Get the will, get a medical directive and a power of attorney done, at a minimum. The medical directive, you're going to have your plug puller on there.
Yes.
And that's the hardest thing is who is going to have the abilities to be independent and not emotional on that point to make a decision on to make sure your wishes, if you don't want to be resuscitated or
right.
other things,
yeah.
it's usually not your spouse, believe it or not, right? Because mm-hmm. that's just too hard. May not even be your kids.
Yeah.
So that's the hard part, wouldn't you say, too, Lindsay, that the plug puller is the one.
Yeah.
And in my family, it's my youngest son, I think, who's going to be the one to pull the plug. But yeah, who knows? That could change, too, like you said. And I love
them. I can see that. Those youngest kids.
Yeah. They just, it looks like they don't care about dad or mom. I can do that, right?
They might change, though, as the years go on.
No, and that's a joke, Joseph, if you're listening. But my youngest son. But the other thing, just last week, I met with a very young couple, 30-year-old, mm-hmm. which you wouldn't think estate planning is important, no will, but they like to travel. And they go on airplanes together with no will.
Mm-hmm.
So what happens to the kids? They have three young kids. And they literally had this, like, terribly panicked look in their face. And I go, well, the county will decide who gets to take care of your kids then. And they're just like, all right, how do I get this figured out? So back to the will, that's where you would if you have young kids, it's maybe not about your assets anymore. It's about who takes care of your kids and then establishing what assets you have. How is that going to be dispersed to your children to make sure all your goals for your kids are accounted for? So as you mature in different things and kids graduate and move on, get married, that will can change and becomes very dynamic. And that's what we recommend 2 to 5 years at the most I go out is to try to renew that, look at that, talk mm-hmm. it over, and we can sit down with you in those intervals, or we can be the person to call you every year and say, we got to come in. You said you wanted me to come in or wanted you to be honest to come in with me to talk, and we mm-hmm. can do that. So not trying to shock anybody on the radio today, but that's probably your assets can be kind of handled relatively straightforwardly, but your children, mm-hmm. that's a hard thing to determine. So anyway, I'll throw that out there at the last second and I'll run out of time.
Yeah.
But
anyway,
Lindsay, you did awesome today.
Yes.
So,
thank you.
Not that I'm concerned you weren't, because she's so great, and you can see why we're so happy to have her, with the firm and the things she does. And again, you spend most of your time in Litchfield, but you are in Willmar. And she is probably our trust and estate tax return expert in our firm. We have other folks who do them, but she's kind of the gal taking that over. We had a partner, Mark Nicholson, out of Litchfield office, retire here in
testing
the last year
one, two,
or so.
Three.
So that means we're done, I guess, if our time's out. But anyway, Lindsay Kranz, guys, does a great job. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And how do we reach the firm? If I know you guys got a website, but do you have what's the best phone number to call, too?
Well, the Willmar phone number is 235-5937, and the Litchfield number is?
That's 320-373-1040.
Well, that's kind of sexy.
Yeah.
1040. I forgot it was 1040.
Yeah.
Can I say sexy in the air? Is that bad?
No.
Okay.
And
there
are, now if people want to get their taxes done too, you guys are taking clients, for
we
that
are.
As
we
well.
Still got a few slots open. So, And Lindsay also specializes in that area as well. So,
I could see that.
She's good. Yeah.
But I mean, that's great. I'm glad you're in your field of expertise, and thanks so much for coming in today.
Thank you.
Bill.
All right. Take care, guys. And that's our program for today.